And then I met with our priest, Father Michael. We met at McDonald's, and I said to him, I love your theology, but your services are so weird. And then he said to me, why don't you come marinate with us for three times? And he later said he doesn't remember saying that, but I thought, okay, I can do that. So I went to church for three times. And during the service, I would be looking at my clock because I could hardly wait for it to be over because it was so long. Then as soon as it was over, I could hardly wait to come back.
Okay, welcome everyone to the Orthodox Christian Podcast. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Evie Klassen. And for everyone watching or listening, Evie, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself and tell everyone what you spend your time doing?
1 second or longer?
Well, as long as you'd like, a couple minutes if you'd like.
Okay. I am probably first and foremost a wife and a mother. I've been married for 36 and a half years. I have 6 kids who most of them have partners. And I have a new daughter who's Pakistani and she's also married. So between all of them, there's lots of people. There's like 21 of us now in our family. We have 7 grandkids. But apart from that, which takes a huge part of my thought and preoccupation, I love to write. I've recently published a children's story. I love to teach. I'm teaching a course right now on spirituality and the helping professions at Trinity. And I recently completed a master's degree, which was just for fun. And that was on peace building and collaborative development. So those are lots of my interests.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a full life. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you encountered the Orthodox Church? Because from what I know of your story, you were a convert at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a 40-year journey, I'm sure. I started wrestling, I would say, with just the messages that I was receiving at church, probably since I was a little girl, but really intentionally 10 years before I discovered Orthodoxy. So how far do you want me to go back and how in depth do you want me to go right now?
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you were raised with and give us sort of a synopsis of that so people have a sense from what you're coming from, and then just move us to the point of how Orthodoxy appeared on the radar.
Okay. So I was raised in a very loving home by refugee parents who were just overjoyed at the freedom they had to be able to go to church when they arrived in Canada. So we went to church a lot, like Sunday morning and evening, Wednesdays, and church was a huge part of my life. And the church, the home I was raised in, I think was very welcoming, and we invited the stranger in. My parents were very hospitable, and I would say the church community was the same way, but the messages that came from the pulpit were so focused on not going to hell and praying the prayer so that you don't go to hell that it became, I would bring my friends to church and it became a very scary message for some of my friends whose parents were not going to church. So the pain, I was a highly sensitive person. So the pain that my friends would experience, I think sat with me and I didn't know what to do with the message that seemed to be coming from the Bible and with what I was experiencing in my relationships. So I think over the years, I internally wrestled with that message, but I didn't know what to do with it because I felt like a heretic if I would ever say anything out loud. And then when my kids grew up, you know, their friends started receiving the same kind of messages from us or from the church that we brought them to. And again, it was a painful experience. So I guess it was in 2004 when one Sunday they at church, the service that we were going to was just too crowded. So they asked some people to stop going to that service and go to a service. And my husband told me the next Sunday, oh, by the way, I said we'd go to a different service. And then I was feeling connected to the with the people at the service we were at. And then I said, maybe we should just stop going. And I think what happened was I realized that I didn't have the language to know how to tell my kids there's something that I disagree with about this, but I didn't know how to tell them what I disagreed with. So I figured we'll just stop going for about 3 months. I mean, a couple months. Yeah, maybe by Easter. This was February. I thought by Easter we'll have it all figured out. And that few months turned into 10 years. And I really, really struggled with not taking my kids to church. My husband was working in an organization where he was often preaching, so he was very connected to the church. And we started a home fellowship where we had friends over, and that helped us feel connected. But my journey of church being a huge priority from childhood made me feel really guilty every Sunday, probably until noon when church would be over, and then I'd relax a little bit. And I didn't know the damage that I might be doing to my kids by not taking them, but in the same breath, I couldn't keep going because I didn't have peace or just felt this blockage. Anyways, so my niece was going to Orthodox Church. I hadn't even heard of it before then. I didn't know the difference between Orthodoxy and Catholic churches. And I went a couple of times to some of the service that she was part of. And I started hearing more and more about Orthodoxy that really intrigued me. And then I met with our priest, Father Michael. We met at McDonald's. And I said to him, I love your theology, but your services are so weird. And then he said to me, why don't you come marinate with us for 3 times? And he later said he doesn't remember saying that, but I thought, okay, I can do that. So I went to church for 3 times. And during the service, I would be looking at my clock because I could hardly wait for it to be over because it was so long. Then as soon as it was over, I could hardly wait to come back. And there was this tug of war inside of me. And so I went for 3 times, and that 3 times started in 2013. And it's 2024, so I guess I haven't quit.
Okay. So just a couple of questions, one in relation to what you grew up with. So it sounds like the people were very lovely, but in terms of the theology that was being preached on Sunday, it was problematic insofar as it was focusing specifically on hell and people being damned and separated from God. And this was particularly acute when you would bring a friend that may not be a churchgoer, and they went through some agony hearing this message, and then you're very empathetic, it sounds like, and so you would experience that yourself. Were there other reasons aside from that you felt yourself being distanced from the church or moving towards something else?
I would say that was the biggest one.
Okay. And then in terms of encountering Orthodoxy, you mentioned that you had this niece and she was going to an Orthodox church, and then you started to tag along. Were there other churches that you started to go to prior to that to try and find if something else fit?
No, not really.
Okay. So Orthodoxy was the first one. And tell us more about this strange feeling when you're going to the liturgy and, you know, you love the theology. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about that as well. Like, what was it about Orthodox theology that you found intriguing? And also, what was it about the liturgy that was sort of off-putting initially?
Okay. I would say if I could summarize it in one sentence, it would be the church is called to be a hospital, not a court of law. And coming as a background as a nurse myself, that idea that God is physician who longs to heal me rather than God is judge who is waiting to damn me really resonated with me. And I just felt like it was good news that I am sick and I need to be healed. And I cannot judge another person's sickness because I don't have the same sickness they have. Doesn't mean I'm better than them, or that I am not in need of healing like they are. We have different needs, different remedies that will heal us. So church became a place for me to recognize my sickness and my need for healing, and to come as a broken person, not a put together person. There were many times I would come and I would just cry, and it was okay. It was okay just to stand there with tears streaming down my face, and people were not surprised or worried about me, but they were caring for me. We can go into that more, but I'll try to switch to your second question, which was about the services. I think I was raised where missions was very central to the way we lived, and my parents supported missionaries. I think coming from a communist country where talking about Jesus was forbidden, having a hymn book or a Bible was forbidden, the good news of being able to talk about it was really significant for my parents. And so I think they wanted everyone to know how good God is and that we can talk about God. And so supporting missionaries was really high on my parents' priority. So when I would come to the Orthodox service, it just didn't feel like it was transportable with all of the stuff, all of the robes and the incense and the icons and the crosses. How I would imagine, how can this be taken to Thailand or Cambodia or Africa or wherever? I know it is in Africa and Ethiopia and other places, but it just felt complicated. And so my judgy mind couldn't reconcile how a service like this could be shared worldwide. So it felt inaccessible, I would say. And I think the other thing that I struggled with was, you know, let us complete our prayers unto the Lord. How many times is that said during the service? And then it's never completed. So there was so many, so much liturgy that didn't make sense to me. And over time, I think I allow it to just wash over me, and someday one word will strike me, and then another day another strike will strike me. And even though it seems like it's the same liturgy every day of every year, it's valuable, and I need it.
Mm-hmm. And so when you started going to this Orthodox church, did you have, like, were some of the other members of your family tagging along, or was it more of a solo venture at first? How did that unfold?
Actually, I don't remember exactly a couple of my other members were there first, and I was interested in going to a different church, a different Orthodox church, because I had started going there, and it was like such good news, all the messages. And then I thought only at that church that good news was being shared. And then I realized, oh no, that's just the Orthodox message that is in all the churches. So it wasn't just this one person that had it all. So then I thought, if I'm going to be weird and go to a different church, I might as well go to the same church that some of my kids are at, because I don't want to be more fragmented from my family by going to another church. So that's why I started going to the one we went to, or I do go to.
Oh, okay. Okay. So some of your kids were actually going there first. It wasn't actually just your niece, but some of your kids as well. And then
eventually,
you started tagging along. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, I mean, you said you've stayed there since, but maybe tell us a little bit about the journey of, like, becoming Orthodox, and maybe if there was, like, shifts in mindset or in practices, and what this looked like concretely in your life.
Yeah. So when I started going, I think I felt very content to not become Orthodox for a long time. And I felt like I can just just attend, and that felt satisfying to me. Sorry, I forgot what the question was.
Just how that transition unfolded. So like today you are Orthodox, but mm-hmm. prior you weren't. And so there's a bit of a metamorphosis, I imagine, in terms of just how you live out your Christian life from being a Protestant. And I'm guessing a Mennonite Protestant, last name, to an Orthodox Christian. You know, these things look differently.
Yeah. Okay. So I started going thinking, I'll just be a catechumen until I'm 99 and that's okay. And then one Sunday, because my husband isn't Orthodox, and the struggle of not knowing I would not be able to take communion with my husband, I think was, and when with other people that I love, was a pretty big barrier for me to want to become Orthodox. So I just thought I'll just keep going, and it doesn't matter if I don't get to take communion. And then one Easter, it was in 2017. So this was October of 2013 that I started going. And then it was Easter of 2017 that I went to I think it was a Wednesday service where they anoint you with oil. And then they were anointing everyone with oil. But then when it came to me, they used like rose water or something else. And I was like, I want the oil. Like, why can't I have the oil too? And something shifted in me. And it was just like, it's time. I want it. I want it all. I don't want to wait till I'm 99. So we hosted the Pascha party at our house that year. And I remember just weeping, knowing I wanted to become Orthodox, yet knowing what it meant as far as the struggle with us, with being separated from my husband and being able to go to his church and take communion. Like, it just was really painful for me. And my husband said to me, you've been marinating long enough, just get on that barbecue. And it was like he was releasing me. It was like, it's okay. We can figure this out. We can navigate our way through, and don't let that hold you back. So then in May of that year, I got chrismated, and it was a beautiful service. Then I went on a little spiritual honeymoon. I went to a pilgrimage in Scotland with Father Seraphim, and had a really beautiful experience. And so since then, we have been able to navigate it, and it's been fine.
Mm-hmm. And what are some aspects of the tradition that you grew up with that you've retained and felt helped by? And then maybe the reverse as well, like because your husband is still part of the Protestant church, have you noticed that there's been aspects of Orthodoxy that have maybe been helpful for him, or that have sort of opened a new way to engage with theology?
I would say yes. I think you gave me a couple of questions there. I think both of us have been on a journey towards recognizing God as physician, God as good, that loves mankind or humankind. That's the first prayer that comes to my mind every morning when I wake up. Thank you that you are good and you love everyone. And so we are both walking that journey together, and him staying Protestant doesn't change that we're both on this journey. You also asked me what I'm retaining from my, I think I am who I am, and who I am. When I became Orthodox, it was such a huge decision for me. Do I do this? Do I not? I wrestled back and forth, and I wept about it, like I said. And then once I became Orthodox, it was just like, okay, carry on. It's just, nothing's changed. I am who I am. I am a product of my upbringing, all the beautiful things that I learned from church, and I'm continuing on to be me. And so, yet what's changed, I guess, is that I'm not asking that question anymore. Do I become Orthodox or don't I? It's just like, okay, I'm settled. I'm carrying on. And I continue to go to church because I need it, because I need the medicine that I get. And I want to be whole. Orthodoxy, my upbringing taught me deep, heavily to surrender, to lay down my life. Orthodoxy teaches me the same thing. Orthodoxy teaches me that my highest goal is to become more like Christ, to humble myself. And that doesn't feel different than the home that I was raised in.
So you have that sense of continuity, but also fulfillment in the sense that there are aspects or emphases in Orthodoxy that are different in a helpful way, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So if you had to summarize, I mean, you've given some of these reasons already for why you joined the Orthodox Church, but if someone asked you, what are the five reasons? I don't know if there's five reasons per se, but what are the reasons that you joined the Orthodox Church? Would there be any other additional aspects of Orthodox worship or life or theology that you would want to mention as a highlight?
I think it's still the same, but I'll give you a story. I went to visit one of my kids in Montreal, and we went to a store, a house that was an Orthodox bookstore. And it probably was like a split level house. It probably had 5 to 7 floors, like different little staircases that went to this little alcove. And the whole house was full of books. And then I said to the owner, I said, "Do you have any books on salvation?" No, I think it's funny. But he looked at me and he said, "This whole house is full of books on salvation. Like, what do you mean?" And then my child said, "Oh, what she means is, do you have any books about heaven and hell or something like that?" And then he said, "Oh, you want a book about the afterlife?" And then he went to the shelf and got one book and handed it to me. And it was like, to me growing up, salvation always meant you're saved or you're not saved. You prayed the prayer, then you're saved. And if you don't pray the prayer, then you're not saved. And in Orthodoxy, I'm learning that I have been saved, I will be saved, and I am being saved. And everything in life is towards my salvation. So my relationships that I'm struggling with, or the good things, the bad things, it is all to help me become more whole. And so salvation is more of a wholeness that I can grow towards. So I think that is what keeps reminding me and drawing me to Orthodoxy, because it reminds me then of everyone I meet. We are all on the same journey towards wholeness. And I want to be a participant in making that journey sweeter for someone else and not more difficult.
It sounds, yeah, like you experienced in your growing up years a vision of heaven and hell that were very narrow in the sense of the afterlife, and that within Orthodoxy, heaven and hell, these are paths that we walk that are present now. Like, we can set ourselves on a trajectory where we can destroy our lives through living viciously. And this isn't an arbitrary thing where God comes in with this list and says, "Well, you've transgressed and you've messed up on this, this, and this, and this." But actually, it's just the nature of reality that God is the one who necessarily exists. And as we gather close to him, we're experiencing existence. And as we depart from him, it's not that he comes and hits us with a club or something. It's just that we're actually departing from existence. And he says, "Well, you can destroy your life if you so wish, but I wouldn't recommend it." And then there's the way of salvation, which is the way of virtue and becoming a full human being. Again, it's not just this arbitrary thing of, "I said this prayer 10 years ago and it has nothing to do with my life," but it's actually how you live your life. Are you actually becoming more mature, more responsible, a better human being that is beneficial for not only yourself, but actually the society as a whole, that integrates the society, and that this is what it means to be like Christ? And so it's not, again, some arbitrary thing. That's kind of how I think of it. But is that the sense that you're trying to convey, or what you've experienced within Orthodoxy?
Probably. My brain is trying to slowly gather everything you just said. I don't even know if I'm trying really hard to make the world better. That felt like something I tried harder to before becoming Orthodox. I'm trying to be less concerned about that, less concerned about about striving even, but just to become more simple. I'm trying to become more simple in my outlook in life and in my response to other people, and trying hard is something I'm trying to let go of. And I'm just looking over there. I have a picture. I went to Rome quite a few years ago to this catacomb. It's called Priscilla's Catacomb. And in there was a drawing on the wall of the shepherd holding a goat. And the person, she had broken English, and she said, "Oh, and here's a picture of Jesus holding the goats." And I was thinking, oh, in her English, she meant to say sheep. She didn't mean to say goat. And then at the end of the whole tour, she said, "This picture of Jesus holding the goat, the church always taught Jesus carried the sheep, but we also knew that he carried the goats as well." And I bought that picture, and I love it so much because I recognize that I am a goat as well. And I'm one of my mentors in life right now is Dr. Edith Eger. She's a Holocaust survivor. She's 96 years old and a beautiful, beautiful person. And she invites us to either turn, we have the ability to turn to our inner Hitler or our inner Mother Teresa. And she invites us to turn to the good part of us and to allow that part to flourish. So I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that I'm being carried, and I'm grateful for every opportunity I have to hopefully turn towards goodness and wholeness, and to, like you said, to becoming more human, which is to become more whole.
Yeah, well put. And I think that emphasis on just living a simple life, not trying to change the world, it reminds me of Saint Seraphim of Sarov, that famous quote of acquire a spirit of peace and thousands around you will be saved. And so it seems like Orthodoxy has a appropriate emphasis on saving yourself by God's grace and seeing what the ripple effects are, but aiming first to overcome the evil that's tempting all of us, really, and then to face the world. But it's important to have that order, I think, because sometimes it can get misordered or disordered when we maybe try to overcome the evil outside and we don't recognize that we need to be saved as well. So would you have any advice for people that are interested in Orthodoxy? Maybe someone that is coming from a similar background. They might not be, but looking into Orthodoxy, what would be your advice or suggestions to them?
I think there's a lot of room to feel judged when you listen to some of the language that is part of the liturgy. And it was really helpful for me to hear by my priest to not hear these words with the same Protestant lenses or that I have heard them in the past, because they don't mean it the same way. So often words that I hear that might seem harsh, they're actually not intended to be that way. So if I keep the umbrella of God as physician and this is my healing, then it's more helpful for me than, because some of the language is even old English language, or it's not gender neutral language, or it's language that could be off-putting. So try not to get too messed up by that, and ask questions. There's I would guess most priests and most communities are very open to the inquirer asking honest questions, and no question is too scary to ask.
And are there certain examples of words that when you first encountered them within the Orthodox liturgy that you interpreted in a certain way that was off-putting, and now that you've been Orthodox for a little while, you've understood them in a proper way, really? I mean, one example maybe I can mention that I've heard from other people is throughout the liturgy, we say, "Lord, have mercy." And we say it a lot. And sometimes if you come in from the outside, it sounds as if God is this scary judge and you're begging and pleading that he would have mercy on us. Whereas in Orthodoxy, it's more like, save us, fill us with your divine life, unite us with yourself. This is more the sense of mercy. And even the Jesus prayer too, I think, of where it says, "Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner." And this notion of a sinner can also strike people differently. So in Orthodoxy, as you were saying, it is much more about healing, God coming to infuse us with divine life. And that is what it means to be a sinner. We've separated ourselves from life and we need life and we're rotting away in our sins and God comes to heal us. But sometimes if we haven't been raised with that understanding, sinner can feel like we're guilty and we've got this taint on us, and it can be very off-putting for people. So I'm wondering, in your own experience, were there certain words or parts of the liturgy that at first struck you in a strange way, but then you came to appreciate them?
Yeah, those are two really good examples. I would say the mercy feels more like standing under a waterfall and just letting the beauty of God's goodness wash over me. So if I imagine that when I'm asking for mercy, that feels a lot more whole and the way it's intended to be. And I love the prayer, "Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, the sinner of whom I am first." I always add that, and it feels like it situates myself as maybe one that has been taught to judge and to judge people's actions. It helps me recognize that I am the first of sinners and I have no right to judge another person. So it has become a really beautiful prayer for me that is definitely part of my daily breathing.
And would you have any books that you would recommend to people that either are exploring Orthodoxy or perhaps they've been Orthodox for a while and might be looking for something to read?
I think there's people that have inspired me, like St. Nectarius, the movie Man of God. I read the book about St. Nectarius, or by St. Nectarius, I think it's called that, and I was very inspired by him. Because he reminds me of my father-in-law, who was very humble. And St. Nectarius is a model of someone who, cleaned the toilets for boys that were supposed to be doing it just so they wouldn't get in trouble. And I love the way he modeled how to live. And Father Arseny as well. There's two books by two different Father Arsenys. One was in a Soviet Gulag kind of prison camp, and the other one I don't remember where he was, but they were both very inspiring as well for me. So I'm definitely drawn to examples of people who have lived the life that I'm wanting to live.
And the last question I'll ask really is, you have mentioned some challenges that you've faced along the way. I don't know if you want to just riff on that and mention what you've already kind of expounded it, but maybe in a bit of a longer format. But what challenges maybe initially did you face when you're encountering Orthodoxy or along the way? And then how have you overcome some of those and remained in the Orthodox Church?
Okay. I think the icons and the emphasis on the Mother of God, the Theotokos, was unfamiliar to me. Mary seemed like one of the many people that were important to Jesus. And so the emphasis on Mary, I think, was surprising, and I wasn't sure what to do with that. Is it worship? Is it, like, there was just questions that I had about that. And then I think I had an encounter that made me realize how beautiful it is. Like I said, I used to go and I would just cry. And one time I was at church and I was standing in front of the icon of Mary, and the way the iconographer drew her, she just looks at you wherever you're standing in the church. If you're at the side, whatever, her eyes are gazing at you. And then her baby, Christ, is looking into her eyes. And I felt like he said to her, "Who do you see, Mom?" And then she said, "I see her." And she was looking at me. Then I felt seen, and I felt like I was crying because I had prayers that were too painful to pray. And I didn't know how to have those prayers. So it felt like just standing there, she was telling Jesus about my prayers, about my sadness. And then on the other side of the iconostasis is an icon of Jesus, the man. And it was like he was saying to me, "Who do you see?" And I could bring other people's prayers that were not too painful for me to pray, other people's burdens, because they weren't as personal to me. So I could pray for someone else, even though I couldn't pray for myself. So then I started going to church sometimes just to stand in front of the icons, just to be seen. And the icons became a real comfort for me because of who they represent. And it reminded me that I'm not alone in this world, and I'm surrounded by beautiful people that have gone before us and who have walked difficult paths, and they're cheering for me, and they're hoping for me, and they're supporting me. One of the first messages I remember Father Michael preaching was about the paralytic, and the friends lowered him down, and he said, "We are all paralyzed, and we all have difficulty accessing Jesus or coming or wanting to come to Jesus even. And we all need friends to lower us down." And I was imagining that he was going to go on to say, you know, think about the friends you have in your life that are going to help you. And instead, he turned to the icons around him and said, like, "Here, these people that we're surrounded with are there to help us." And it surprised me. It was a worldview I hadn't imagined, that I could call on help from people that have died already. So every time I go to church, when I walk into church, there's a place where you can list the people that you want to pray for, people that are alive and people that have passed on already. And I love writing down all the names of people that I love who have passed on, and knowing that I can pray for them, and I can ask them to pray for me. I can just bring them into this otherworldly realm that I don't see or feel necessarily with my senses right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a beautiful story and really a wonderful place to conclude the interview for today. So I want to thank you, Evie. It's been a real pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you.
Hey guys, thanks for checking out that episode of the Orthodox Christian Podcast. If you have a question about Orthodox Christianity, there is a link in the episode description that you can check out. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate it if you shared it with one friend or family member. And in the meantime, I hope that you have a peaceful week. Take care.